ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Text 25. Tadvishvarupam bhajatashu vipram tapasvinam tvashtam atatmavantam sabhajiturtham savidasyatevo yadikshamishyadvam utasya karma. O demigods, this is Lord Brahma speaking. O demigods, sorry, I'm just posing for effect. O demigods, I instruct you to approach Vishwarupa, the son of Tvashta, and accept him as your guru. He is a pure and very powerful Brahmana, undergoing austerity and penances. Pleased by your worship, he will fulfill your desires, provided that you tolerate his being inclined to side with the demons. There is a short purport. Lord Brahma advised the demigods to accept the son of Tvashta as their spiritual master, although he was always inclined toward the benefit of the asuras. Basically, he's saying, he's the right person for you, he is good, very strict, but you need to tolerate that he has this tendency to side with the with your enemies, with the asuras. Text 26. Shisuka vacha taivannudita rajan brahmana vigatajvara rishim tvashtram upavrajya parishvajedham abhruvan. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus advised by Lord Brahma and relieved of their anxiety, all the demigods went to the sage Vishwarupa, the son of Tvashta. My dear king, they embraced him and spoke as follows. Shideva uchu vayante titaya prapta ashramam bhadramastute kama sampadyatam tata pitranam samayuchitah. The demigods said, beloved Vishwarupa, may there be all good fortune to you. We, the demigods, have come to your ashram as your guests. Please try to fulfill our desires according to the time, since we are on the level of your parents. Text 28. Putranam hi paro dharma pitre sushushanam satam api putravatam brahman kimuta brahmacharinam. O Brahmana, the highest duty of a son, even though he has sons of his own, is to serve his parents. And what to speak of a son who is a brahmachari? Text 29. Acharyo brahmano murti pita murti prajapatihi bhratra marutpatir murtir mata shakshat kshitistanu. And these are together, text 29 and 30. We have 30 on the board. Dayaya bhagini murtir dharmasyatma tithi swayam agnirabhyagato murtihi sarvabhuta nichatmanah dayaya bhagini murtir dharmasyatma tithi swayam Agnir Abhyagato Murtihi Sarvabhuta Nichatmanaha. Ladies, one more, please. Thank you. Word by word translation. Okay. Dayayaha of mercy. Bhagini, the sister. Murtihi, the personification. Dharmasya, of religious principles. Atma, the self. Atiti, the guest. Swayam, personally. Agnihi, of the fire god. Abhyagataha, the invited guest. Murtihi, the personification. Sarvabhutani, all living entities. Cha, end. Atmanaha, of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. So translation of both verse 29 and 30. So this is still the demigods speaking to Vishwarupa, the son of Tvashta. The Acharya, the spiritual master who teaches all the Vedic knowledge and gives initiation by offering the sacred thread, is the personification of all the Vedas. Similarly, a father personifies Lord Brahma. A brother, King Indra. A mother, the planet Earth. And a sister, Mercy. A guest personifies religious principles. An invited guest personifies the demigod Agni. And all living entities personify Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. According to the moral instructions of Chanakya Pandit, Atmavat Sarva Bhuteshu, One should observe all living entities to be on the same level as oneself. Is he sleeping? See, if you sleep when I talk, it's okay. But if you sleep when Srila Prabhupada talks, it's not so okay. So wait 2 minutes, then you go back to sleep. This means that no one should be neglected as inferior. Because Paramatma is seated in everyone's body. Everyone should be respected as a temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse describes the different ways in which one should respect a guru, a father, a brother, a sister, a guest, and so on. Amagyanati viranda sakinan jana salakaya chakshurum meditam yena tasmai shri guru yinam shri guru yinam shri guru yinam shri Vedanta Swamini Tinamini Namaste Sasvati Devi Gurvani Kishane Nivishisha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshadarine Vansha Kalpadra Vishya Kripa Sindha Shatyam Pya Vaishnavi Bhyo Namunama. See, my sense is that if we understand this verse, if we imbibe this verse, our life can radically change. It's much easier to become successful, much easier to be peaceful, optimistic, and of course realistic. This concept that everyone represents the Lord, it's a very powerful concept. And definitely, it's at the same time, it's also a very basic concept. We are souls, we are parts and parts of Krishna, and everybody's a soul, and everybody is a part and parcel of Krishna. And therefore, everybody is special, because Krishna is super special, and his parts and parcel are also special. It would be inconceivable for Krishna to have anything which is not special. So the souls are all specials. They're little Krishnas, in one sense. And it's not body is less. And then Srila Prabhupada says, Paramatma, Shirodakashaya Vishnu's expansion is in everyone's heart. So everyone has access to the Lord in the heart of the soul, not just in the heart in general. So nobody can say, my Paramatma is better than yours. No, mine is very muscular, very alert, and yours is kind of weak and spaced out. No, it's the same Paramatma. Bhagavad Gita says, like there is one Paramatma, and then the analogy is that like the sun is one, but is on everyone's head. You can't say, my sun is better than yours. Mine is warm and luminous, yours is dark and, you know, weak. It's cold. Your sun is cold. My sun is hot. Obviously, it doesn't make any sense. So we are all pervaded by Paramatma. We are all souls. And so the Srila Prabhupada say, we should respect everyone, and by everyone meaning the embodied person, the person as we see them. We may not see the soul, we may not see the Paramatma, but we need to see every body, the body of everyone as a temple, because Krishna is there and the soul is there. So if we could imbibe this, that would be very beautiful. We would be much more respectful. You see, sometimes in India, you have this, even these drivers, if they are Hindus, when you go near a temple, they do some sort of respect. No? Some, they touch, what I know, they see the temple and they do some sort of, something, I don't know what success, but they're driving, so you don't want them to do too much, you know. You don't want them to do full dandavas. But so they're there and I see another temple. No, because they have the sense that it's a special place. They don't do it to every house, otherwise they couldn't drive. But they don't do it to every house. But to the temple they do. I think many of you have this experience. So similarly, if we could see the body of every person, man, woman, child, theistic, atheistic, pious, impious, as a temple, wow, that would be really, I mean, it would be, it would like you live in the sacred, you're always in a sacred space, you're always in the temple. You're always surrounded by temples. And plus there is a further meditation here. There are all these categories which are very interesting. Very interesting. The guru, of course, the guru represents the Vedas. The acharya, acharyaha, brahmano murti, is the form of the, brahmano means the Vedas, is the form of the Vedas, because he teaches you the Vedas. The Vedas come through the guru, through the acharya. So, acharyavan purusho veda, one who has the acharya knows the Vedas. It's not just, sometimes he gives this analogy, which is correct, that the guru is like the postman, gives you the information, but there's a little more. I mean, the analogy is right, it's perfect, but it what do you call it? It emphasizes one aspect of the transparent media. This is the letter, and he gives you the letter as it is. That's one aspect. But acharyavan purusho veda means something also more. If you have the guru, then you understand the Vedas. Yasya deve parabhaktir yatha deve tata guru tasya te katita yarta prakashante mahatmana. If you have full faith in God, you have full faith in the Guru, then to them the whole purport of the Vedas becomes revealed. So there is not only the aspect of pure transmission, but there is the aspect of activation. You can't just go in a library, in a bookshop, and say, can you give me the Vedas, please? Which one you want? Well, all of them. Give me the four Vedas, the Samhitas, Brahmanas, Upanishads. Give me also the Puranas, the Itihasas. Then you go home, you study. Okay, now I got the Vedas. This doesn't work exactly like that. Without Guru, the knowledge doesn't get activated. Also because the Vedas will tell you, you accept the Guru. So if you read the Vedas, you don't accept the Guru. You're not really learning the Vedas. Okay. Then, Father personifies Lord Brahma. Of course, Lord Brahma is, his name is Pitamaha, the grandfather. And there is we could say biological, we could say cosmically physiological relation. Brahma is our father. I mean, not direct father. But if you go, you see your father, your grandfather, grand-grandfather, grand-grand-grand-grand-grand-grand-grand-grandfather for thousands and thousands of generations. And then who is there? Brahma. In India, people still know, like when they say, what's your gotra? There's some sages, and those sages come from Brahma. So ultimately, Brahma is the progenitor. And in fact, in the Bhagavatam, in the discussion of the Virat Rupa, Brahma represents the male organ of the Lord. And so a father does in a small scale the same function. The father is the progenitor. And so the father represents Brahma. A small note before these demigods, they are preaching to Vishwarupa, they say, look, we are on the same level of your father, therefore you need to take really seriously what we are asked, because there is no higher duty to serve the father, okay? And it's true in a general sense, it's true, but there are exceptions. I mean, this is sixth canto, next canto, seventh canto, we'll see. Prahlad Maharaj, he doesn't always obey his father. Very respectful, very obedient as a person, but when the father tells him to go against the Lord, he neglects the father. He goes against the father. So if a father is qualified, yes, he represents, I mean, every father represents Brahma, because it represents the function of progenitor. But not every father you can listen or be 100% submissive. It's life. Then the mother represents the planet Earth. Same principle. Mother Earth gives us our bodies. Our bodies are products of the earth. Our bodies are products of the earth. Our bodies are made of food. We eat food. No? Dal, rice, chapati, sabjis, some sweets, this, that. That becomes our body. We start with a very small body. Actually, we start with no body. And the mother gives us the body. The father only puts the seed, but then the mother, our bodies are made from the bodies of our mother. For 9 months, and not only 9 months, because after 9 months you don't go and get out and get a job and you are on your own. After 9 months, you have to drink the body of your mother in the form of milk. The blood of the mother transforms into milk. So you're still, and your body grows, and grows a lot. Actually, in those months, it grows a lot. So you are made of your mother's body. And then, when you walk by yourself, then still, culturally, psychologically, in a normal family, you are made of the food cooked by your mother. So it's the consciousness of your mother, the cooking of your mother, that makes you physically what you are. Then, even then, okay, you may say, well, then at one point you get out of your house, hopefully. I mean, come on. I mean, at one point you get out of your house. So your body is big. Your mother doesn't cook anymore. Okay, but still, the earth is still your mother. Today you'll eat rice, dal, whatever you like to eat, pizza, whatever you like. Those are all products of the earth. Everything comes from the earth. So in a big sense, the earth nourishes all its sons and daughters. So the earth is our mother. And our personal mother represents the earth. And again, more than in one sense, more than just in the biological sense of giving us the body, also feeding us, the feeding, that affection, the consciousness nourishes us. Some people don't have a mother. It's not a rule, but some people don't have that affection from the mother. They have very difficult lives. They're very strange conceptions of women, no? see them as enemy or something. Anyway, I want to go there. A guest. This is very interesting. I'm not 100% sure about what I'm going to say now, but I'm going to say anyway. And if you think it's too, is off, you tell me, okay? We are all adults here, so. So a guest personifies religious principles. An invited guest personifies the demigod Agni. Now, this is a very interesting, first of all, it's a very interesting difference. A guest, Atiti is called Atiti. And the invited guest is called Abhyagataha. And it makes a difference. It obviously makes a difference between somebody, Atiti, what does Atiti mean? Titi means day, not Titi, the Titi, the day. Atiti means it's an invited guest. You don't know when he will come, or when they will come, sometimes there are more. You don't know, you have not planned for them. So in one sense, it represents dharma, because it tests your dharma. How much you really see the Lord. Don't they say, Atiti Narayana, there is some verse like that? Atiti Devo, something. Atiti Devo Bhava, it represents the Lord. Because again, the Lord is in the heart. So when an uninvited guest is coming, you're just about to start eating. So that tests your dharma. How religious you are. Are you going to really give the full facilities, sacrifice maybe your food, sacrifice your comfort, give the best room, or not? Now, with the Abhyagataha, with the invited guest, it's a little different, because you invited them, so you expect them, you're prepared, both practically and psychologically, you expect them, plus you invited them. There are people you like. Otherwise you won't invite them, unless it's a very like political thing. But you invited them, they're your friends, people you chose. You invited them, you didn't invite us. Under. So they represent Agni. Again, I'm not 100% sure, but it looks like Agni, you invite the fire. It's not something that comes by itself. I mean, that's an accident. But you do the homa, you do the sacrifice, you really, it's very, what do you call, purposeful. You do the mantras, then you install the fire, and so you give very a lot of attention, but in one sense it's a little easier, because you know you're going to do a yagya. You don't just walk into a yagya, you know. So similarly, it's a little easier to take a care of a guest who you invited, because you plan, okay, what we're going to cook, where he's going to sit, we need another chair, bring it from that room. It's like a little easier. But still is sacred, represent Agni. You don't want to mess with Agni. Okay, we are going to talk also about two more things. But before that, is there any question about what we discussed so far? Yes, do we have a mic?
Hare Krishna, I have two questions. The first question is on the temple of all the souls. Does it make any difference how the temples are maintained?
It makes a lot of difference, but the question would be, for whom it makes difference? In other words, if you accept that Krishna is there, either the temple structure is well maintained, is freshly painted, or is kind of falling apart, for you, still Krishna is there. Or is managed properly, or is not managed properly, still is a sacred place. So definitely you'll make some difference. Obviously, if you go in the temple that the ceiling is falling off, you'll be a little bit careful. There are some holes. Some temples you go, South India, they're full of bats, rats, cockroaches. So obviously, when you pay obeisances, you know, sometimes it's full of droppings of birds. So you make a little difference. Maybe before doing full dandavats and kissing the floor in devotion, you want to clean a little bit, you know. So, but still it's sacred. The deity is there. So similarly, yes, we should see everyone as the temple of the Lord. I'm not saying I see like that. We are here to learn. I happen to speak today, but we are all here to learn. So we should see everybody as a temple of the Lord. But you make difference. Because you know, this temple is a living Bhagavatam. It's a person Bhagavata. This person, anytime he opens his mouth, he talks about Krishna. Or anytime he talks his mouth, he gives some useful advice. And this other person, every time he opens the mouth, he expresses some foul language, some vulgarity, some blasphemy. So obviously, you don't want to spend time in that temple. Okay? Was okay? The answer was okay? Yes?
Hare Krishna. My second question is about the guests, the uninvited guests. And recently I had a guest ring up and asked to come.
You had the guest?
They rang me up and said they'd like to stay with me.
Okay.
And I had a cold. And last time they came, I gave them my room. But this time I wasn't ready to give my room because I was still suffering with flu and I just felt like I wanted my space. So I said, I said you can come, but you'll sleep in the lounge room.
In the?
In the lounge room.
In the what?
Living room.
Living room, sorry.
Okay. We don't have lounges in India. and then my daughter said to me, Mum, that's probably not correct. The guest didn't end up coming. It was an Indian guest. I don't know if I offended them or what, but I was wondering, can you just give some details about how do we have to give, you know, I'm meant to give everything to the guests?
You have to give what?
Everything.
Everything?
Like, what should I have given my whole room to the guest?
Anybody likes to answer that question? Yes, Prabhu, can you give the mic?
Depend of situation, how you situation.
Depends on the situation.
Yeah. So, best and the guest you do the... always best that much is do that is good.
Do you like that answer? You didn't hear the answer.
The best and guest is come, you go, give good, nice way. Is nicely treat.
So if I understand you correctly, you're saying you do the best. Your best. Do your best.
Yeah.
And if I understand you correctly, you're saying that best will depend on the circumstances. Am I correct? Do you like that answer? That you do your best, and that best sometimes depends on the circumstances. Nice answer, no? I don't know your house. I don't know. So I'm not saying that. But do your best. And the best will sometime depends on the circumstances. Thank you. Beautiful answer. Okay. So today we celebrate two very important anniversaries. One comes every year. The other one also comes every year, but we don't celebrate it every year. The first one is the disappearance of Srila Ramananda Roy. And the second one is that today is the 400th anniversary. Today, it's 400 years that Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita was completed. So, Srila Ramananda Roy, of course, I was thinking about Srila Ramananda Roy when I was thinking about this verse, because this verse is all about relations, and it's very interesting because the same person can have more than a relation. One person is the father, simultaneously is a son, simultaneously maybe a brother, simultaneously maybe a grandfather, and then of course he has a mother, he may have a sister. So it's like almost like a dance of relations, and how in each role it will be a different person. As a father, it will be we have role as maybe disciplinarian and so on. As a son, it will be obedient. So, and it's the same person, and there's no contradiction. None of these roles are mutually exclusive. Similarly, Ramananda Roy, it is said that he is Vishakha Devi, which is considered the closest of Srimati Radharani's gopis. In fact, generally, we, or at least officially or formally, generally, we don't celebrate her appearance. Have you noticed? I mean, do we have a Vishakha Devi appearance day? We have Lalita Devi, right? Why? Because she is born on the same day of Srimati Radharani. Lalita Devi is older. We celebrate two days before Srimati Radharani, right? Lalita Shashti. And then Radhastami. Vishakha Devi, she's so important, but we almost don't celebrate her, because the same day, so it kind of gets almost eclipsed, right? So Vishakha Devi, of course, for comprehensiveness sake, I need to mention that Srila Prabhupada mentions both. He mentioned that he is Vishakha Devi, but he also quotes bona fide source that says she's Lalita Devi. And some other source says that Swarup Damodar Goswami, he is Lalita Devi, but sometimes he said he is Vishakha Devi. But generally, what I see most time, Ramananda Roy is Vishakha Devi. And he's also Arjuna. These things are difficult to understand, how the same person can be Arjuna and Vishakha Devi. But this is the, as we were saying in the beginning, Krishna is special, and his personal aspects are very super special. So they can do and they can be this. So Ramananda Roy has got both that Arjuna side, friendship, Sakya Ras, and the Vishakha side, also very closest friend. Okay. And of course we learn about this, about Ramananda Roy, from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. See, there is some time issue, of course, and so we had to choose what to speak today, because the verse is very rich. Ramananda Roy is very rich as a subject, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita is also very rich. So today, I mean, I'm not, obviously, I just, you may think, you may consider you want to go to the 8th chapter of Madhya Lila, Ramananda Samvad, the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy on the bank of the Godavari River. A conversation that culminates In Lord Chaitanya showing him darshan of him as Radha and Krishna. He had shown before Sadbhuj form, but Radha Krishna he shows to Ramananda Roy. So, because it's 400 years that Lord we have the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I wanted to say a few things on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. First of all, I want to give credit because some of these things I got from an article by, I think his name is Bridge Basi Das. He's a scholar from Ukraine, so he compiled a lot of things. You can find it on Dandavats. It's one of the first articles, but some very interesting things. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, I quote from Sajjana Toshani, is one of the principal scholars of the Chaitanya Sampradaya. And Srila Prabhupada, once he said in Mayapur here, he said, Chaitanya Charitamrita author, such an exalted person, practically the most exalted personality in Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Practically the most exalted personality in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. That's a very strong statement. And sometime Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, no, always, not sometime, he comes through as very humble, as very self-effacing, unassuming. He says things, and he keeps saying throughout the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'm unqualified, I'm fallen. He says, I am lower than the worm in stool. And obviously it's not just showing off some kind of self-aggrandizement through humility. He says, look, Vrindavan Das Thakur already wrote the Chaitanya Bhagavata. But they asked me, we want to know more of Lord Chaitanya as a sannyasi. Because Chaitanya Bhagavata, the Adi Lila, is much bigger. And the last part is smaller. So the devotees say, we want to know more about Lord Chaitanya's later years. So he's saying, look, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur, he is the Vyasa of Chaitanya Lila, Vyasadev. I'm only chewing his remnants. Whatever he has not really articulated, he has not elaborated, I'm taking that, I'm just taking his. And he keeps saying that. So he comes through as a very humble person. And we might be tricked. We might be tricked because he keeps saying. But so he may be tricked. He must have been very humble. Yeah, of course he was humble in the heart, but he was a great scholar. He was a great scholar. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, we don't need to prove this statement that he's a great scholar. The books written by Kaviraj Goswami are themselves a wonderful proof of this. You see the books, you see the... And I give you some details. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, he quotes more than 90 different sources. 90 different books. 90 books is a lot. He did not have Bhaktivedanta Veda-based folio. You know, you just put something, Chaitanya, I don't know, 10,000 hits or something. It's not like, at that time, I don't even know if he had a library in Vrindavan. Because he left everything, you know the story, he left everything, he just went into the night. Of course, he might have had access to some libraries there, Radha Govinda Temple, Radha Damodar Temple, I don't know. But he quoted from 90 different scriptures, means he had read them, he knew where to find the scriptures, he heard about them, some of them most probably had memorized them, so he knew the verse. Like you quote the Bhagavad Gita, you don't have to have the book, you know? So he quotes more than 90 books at that time, 400 years ago. Then, the most quoted is Srimad Bhagavatam. 404 times. The books are 62 chapters, divided into three parts, Adilila, Madhyalila, Antyalila, and then the total of 11,555 verses. So 11,000 verses. And 97 Sanskrit slokas, 97 Sanskrit slokas were composed by himself. He did not write only in Bengali. Generally the first verse of the chapter is a Sanskrit invocation or summarization of the chapter. Because Sanskrit has got that, obviously, among scholars, among Vedic followers, Vaishnavas, there is some weight. Like in the West, sometimes you want to say something weighty, something solemn, you say in Latin. No, you quote Latin. Sic transit gloria mundi. Also because people don't understand what you're saying, so wow, it must be very deep. It must be, wow, he quotes Latin. Of course, that's one that was the mood. It was more like an ornament, a glorification in Sanskrit. So he wrote 97 Sanskrit verses. And one thing I want to tell you, which I learned yesterday. One day, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was in Munger. Where is Munger? Somewhere. And he just finished giving a lecture. So he stood up after the lecture. And then there was a little earthquake. Little. And somehow it caused a little flooding from the Ganga. That's what this Munger is on the Ganga. So there was some flooding. So, after that, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, at one point there would be the Mahapralaya, the whole flood of the whole universe. So if you are there at the time of the flood of the universe, do not neglect to take hold of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam and Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, you know, you are there, the universal flood comes. Huh? So don't forget to pick up Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita. But then he goes on. So if you attempt to survive by swimming in that deluge, take these three books. If you cannot hold all three, then release Bhagavad Gita. Can't hold all three. If necessary, you may also relinquish Srimad Bhagavatam. But under no circumstances release your hold on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because if this one book remains, then the flood can do no actual damage. Because after the flood has subsided, the message of Shastra can be revived from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita alone, it being the essence of all Shastras. So you find yourself in a flood, pick up the three books. If you can't hold all of them because they're weighty, maybe going down, you have to drop the Bhagavad Gita. If you still find hard, drop the Bhagavad. But keep the Chaitanya Charitamrita at all costs. Because even if just the Chaitanya Charitamrita remains, then you have everything. Nothing is lost. I have many other things to say, but I don't know, how long should we go for? 8 o'clock. You want to ask some questions? You want me to ask for questions? Huh? One question. At 8 o'clock we have Nisshingadev Darshan, right? And then Panchatattva, and then... So I'll do one thing. At 8 o'clock, because I have a certain thing I would like to share. And today is the basically the first day in which I don't have this little board here. It says end at 8:45. So, I don't know. No, I'm free. So I'll do one thing. I go to 8 o'clock. I officially close. And then if you want to stay, I'll share something more. Please, ask your question.
Prabhu, can you tell why Srila Prabhupada changed that to Bhagavad Gita is most important and it's the essence, the last quote, what source where you have taken?
See, Srila Prabhupada never said that if you are in a flood, pick up the three books. If they are too heavy, drop the Chaitanya Charitamrita, drop the Bhagavatam, but keep the Bhagavad Gita. He never said that. I mean, I never heard. So how can you say that Srila Prabhupada says something different?
Obviously... In terms of importance...
No, and I explain something about expression, hyperbolic expression. You know what's an hyperbole? Hyperbole. It's like... It's an exaggeration to make a point. Huh? So, obviously, this is not a practical instruction. First of all, because if it's a Mahapralaya, nobody survives. There is the... Before the Mahapralaya, there are hundreds of years of scorching heat. You know, the Bhagavatam is described. So, when the inundation comes, nobody's alive. Okay? But hyperbolically or symbolically or analogically or allegorically, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes this point that you say these three books. We didn't say take that Purana, take that Ramayana, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you cannot drop Bhagavad Gita because, you know, In one sense, the Bhagavad Gita is contained in the Bhagavatam, right? One is 700 verses, one is 18,000. And then, if you have these two books, Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and you can't hold both of them, which one you drop? You drop Bhagavatam. Why? Because according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I didn't write this thing, you understand that? He says, because if this one book remains, the message of Shastra can be revived from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. In other words, first of all, there are many quotes from Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. So there is the essence of the Gita and the Bhagavatam. Plus there are things explained in a way that is not in Bhagavad Gita and is not in the Bhagavatam. Like for instance, I give you an example. And again, this is a symbol, you understand? It's not that, the Bhagavatam class today said, I need to go home and throw away the Bhagavad Gita and throw away the Bhagavatam. I never said that. The surest way to be misquoted is to sit on a vyasasana and open your mouth. You will be misquoted. You know what? I'll give you an example. I gave a class once in London. There was a verse, the third canto, about Hiranyaksha. Okay? So I said something mildly humorous. I said, you see, in Krishna consciousness, we don't only have the greatest saints, we also have the greatest demons. In other words, in the Bhagavatam culture, you don't only get the highest holiness, you get also the highest description of evil. Okay? I said that.